All right, this is Ryan Fletcher with Jane Turner of the World Peace Forum, heading the Peace Education Group. Thanks for coming.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me here.
Okay, so let's just get things right off the bat here. Why was the Peace Education Working Group formed?
The BC Teachers Federation thought that it would be a really good idea that we take our message that we try to promote peace within our schools out to the public and have the public come and work with us on developing our message. So it's kind of a two-way street, and that's why we decided to enter into it. Teachers have embraced peace for a long time. It's been something that we've worked on not only as a concept. Nobody's opposed to peace.
Yes.
But this is something that as people who work with kids every day, we see the results of when there isn't peace. We see what happens to kids when there's not peace in the home.
Okay.
We see what happens to kids when they're living in war-torn countries, because we do a lot of international work. And you can't have school. You can't learn if there's no peace.
Yeah.
So peace means lots to things to lots of different people. And in every single way that peace manifests itself throughout the world, so whether it's about poverty, whether it's about family harmony, or whether it's about dropping bombs on people, we see that it really affects kids and their ability to learn and then become the very best person that they can be. So
okay.
This is something that's really near and dear to our hearts.
Can you tell the difference between a child that comes out of an environment of peace and one out of conflict? Like, what kind of things?
Yeah, I can. And, I mean, obviously, every kid, you know, gets to cover up and do what they can do.
Yeah.
But teachers are pretty trained to watch the individual as well as the whole class.
Okay.
And so I'll give you an example of something that I just saw 2 weeks ago, and it's just absolutely mind-blowing how simple but beautiful it was. This is in Burnaby, where I teach. They have what's called their Circles of Learning program, which is for kids from ages 0 to 5, before they get into school.
Okay.
So I went to visit this program, and there was one little boy there who was 5, not mm-hmm. yet ready for school. And kids came in and he would hug them.
Really?
Yeah, he would run up and he'd welcome them and he'd hug them. And I thought this was really quite kind of cool. So I talked to the early childhood educator who's running the program. And I said, this is great. Where'd this kid come from? She said when he first came in, he was hitting the kids.
Oh.
He was being violent. He was bullying. He was pushing. He was hitting. And so what they had done is worked with him mm-hmm. on his obvious need to connect.
Yeah.
There's a physical connection that needs, but he didn't know how to do it appropriately. So
right.
they taught him about touching and hugging in a good and peaceful and loving and caring way. Well, you know, it was really quite astonishing to see this. In the same program, we saw intergenerational and interracial real demonstrations of care and affection.
Okay.
So a little East Indian boy would come in and an Asian grandfather would kind of connect, and they would hug each other and welcome each other,
yeah.
and then they go about their business. So, I mean, this is something that we see on a day-to-day basis, and kids will manifest what they're seeing at home.
Right, yeah.
And we know that. They'll either hurt themselves or they'll hurt others, or they'll behave in ways that just aren't right. And we see it, and our job is to not only teach them about, you know, the ABCs and
right.
read and write and arithmetic, but it's also about teaching them how to be peaceful in this world.
Okay. What are some examples of some things that you would do in the classroom towards peace?
Generally, every teacher sets up, you know, the class rules. We remember those,
yes.
right? And
yeah.
and I think that teachers have, we've all learned collectively a lot over the last decade or two about what the rules really should be. It's not about chewing gum. It's about treating each other with respect.
Mm-hmm.
So in my classroom, there are two rules. Be respectful and don't stop other people from learning.
Right.
That's
yeah.
it. So, and when you start to look at the behaviors of stopping somebody else from learning, what does that look like? It looks like talking to somebody when they're supposed to be listening. It looks like bugging somebody when they're doing their work. It looks like all kinds of things. But kids start to get that idea. And so what does teaching peace look like? It means don't bully.
Yeah.
Don't be racist. Don't be sexist. Don't be homophobic. It looks like finding alternative ways to deal with conflict and problems.
Okay.
Not punching each other out. And I teach high school, so they're pretty hormonal.
Yeah.
And finding ways, as daycare teachers say, use your words, right? And use your words in ways that are constructive and not hurtful. So those are the kinds of sociological things that we do in a classroom.
Okay. What would they mean by that? Like, use your words. What's the message there?
Use your words is if you're angry with someone,
yeah,
speak about how you feel. Don't blame.
Okay.
You know, don't criticize.
So you're saying, like, I'm angry because...
Yeah, I'm angry because you've taken my pencil again. And I spent a lot of time getting this pencil sort of sharpened, and so I don't want you taking my pencil.
Okay.
That's pretty mundane, but you get the idea behind
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah.
Within curriculum, it looks like teaching about the people who created peace. And that's a real challenge for us because our curriculum is based on the people who created war. If you think back to all of the social studies and history that you took in high school and in elementary school, it's about war. Those who perpetuate violence on another. And it's really hard to teach about peace, mm-hmm. conceptually as well as just from, you know, the textbooks. It's not there. We're it's getting a bit better.
Great. That's great.
Yeah, it's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination,
yeah.
but there are teachers out there who are creating materials, finding the resources, and kind of turning curriculum on its head
mm-hmm.
so that rather than teaching about war and conflict, why don't you teach about peace and conflict resolution?
Right.
And how do we do that in our world? And that's a tough one to do because, of course, we're all facing exams. And
yeah.
Peace questions don't show up on exams. They show up on, it's war questions that show up there.
Yeah. So has there been kind of resistance to that kind of thing, that idea? Because it's pretty well established in the schools that that's kind of what's important.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that, that's the thing that gets said all the time. Well, we only teach what's really important. And I think it's incumbent upon all of us who have a different point of view about the what's important in the world to really challenge those ideas. And those challenges are starting to sneak through. We're starting mm-hmm. to see some changes. We're starting to see not only just more social history, but what I like to call the complete fabric of history.
Mm-hmm.
So if I taught an AP class on European history, and I always taught the students how to do an analysis by using the acronym of PERMS, the political, economic, religious, military, and social
mm-hmm.
elements of whatever is going on. And it's interesting because mostly we take a look at the political, economic, and military.
Right, yeah.
And if you do that, you're going to talk about war. And you're going to talk,
yeah.
and you're going to talk about what men did.
Yeah,
it's going to be men's, you know, those dead white guys and their history,
yeah.
And that's what has to be challenged. So I think that feminist teachers can start to challenge that by saying, "Wait a minute, there was a whole other sex out there that was part of our past,
mm-hmm.
Part of our literature, part of the way the world unfolded, and it's incumbent upon us to make sure that that other half is presented, so the kids don't get a half picture."
Okay.
They're getting a part picture when they only learn about what men did and the wars that men perpetrate on one another.
So is this? You must be a believer in positive reinforcement then as well, because
sure.
If they're learning about peace in their history classes, is that part of the idea? Like learning the history of peace, then that kind of gets them more interested in peace, or
yes, and it's not only just learning about peace, but it's taking a look at all the conflict situations and trying to have them come up with a different possibility.
Okay, so...
Yeah. It's alternative possibilities is what we're all about. So, yeah, you do. You can talk about the peace movement and the peacemakers.
Yeah.
But it's also about how would you have done this? If this was your predicament and situation, how would you have done this? Because it's not just about learning the facts. I mean, everybody can go and read a book and find out the facts.
Yeah.
It's about changing the way people do things so that when they become the adults running the world,
mm-hmm.
they do things differently.
Mm-hmm.
And if we just keep teaching the way things have been done without any possible alternative, then where are we going to go?
Okay. So how widespread are these ideas? Like, where do these come from?
Well, I think they come from teachers who are committed to making the world a better place. And there are a lot of those teachers out there.
Yeah.
There are some teachers who don't do this because they think it's not part of their mandate or they don't feel comfortable doing it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have enough background. But those are the teachers who, in other ways, will talk about peace either in the classroom behaviors. Right. So they may not be actively teaching it. I mean, it's a pretty committed peace activist that teaches the curriculum from a peaceful point of view. And there are very few of those around. We're hoping the World Peace Forum will create more of those.
Yeah.
I mean, this is really our great opportunity to take all those fabulous educators who from around the world, and they're coming from around the world, who have done really exciting things in their classroom to share their ideas with those of us who'd like to learn from them.
Okay. Has the administrative end, like the principal and the school boards, have they been helpful or have they been a challenge for this kind of thing?
For peace, teaching peace?
Yeah.
I think school boards and administrations will be behind it because the spillover is creative problem solving as opposed to punch up some bullying in the school. So it spills over. What you do in the classroom spills over into the hallway.
Right.
And everybody's interested in having a peaceful school system and institution.
Okay. So what will the group be doing at the forum?
The peace educators are, we have 3 days of programming. And the first day is our academic or theoretical framework, and we're calling it Schools and Society.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got peace educators from classrooms and university profs coming from all over to talk about the theory and the research of the work that they've done.
Mm-hmm.
The second day, we're really programming for teachers to bring their students, so it's field trip day.
Oh, okay.
And so we've got all kinds of really exciting and innovative things. We've got Sandy Greenberg coming from Halifax who does peace songs with kids.
Okay.
So she'll get kids to sing some songs about how to resolve problems. For the younger kids, she's got some puppet work, and she's a singer, so she does that. We've got a couple of people who are coming and doing peace dances.
Okay.
We've got an artist who's going to be doing peace art with kids, which I want to tell you a little bit more about the peace art project, which is just grown out of this by a wonderful coincidence of people talking to one another.
Okay.
You know, so we have lots of a fellow from Vancouver who has his kids do something about the Children's March in Birmingham looking for racial equality.
Okay.
So lots of things for kids, lots of programming for teachers and other adult educators as well.
Okay.
The third day is, we call it Programs That Rock. And these are people who have actually taken conceptually peace education ideas and put them into practice in their schools.
Okay.
So Windsor House in North Vancouver runs on a completely cooperative and peaceful model, the whole school.
All right.
We have 3 children from Olinda, Brazil, coming up who are street kids who are taken into a program where they learn how to be peaceful, and they're going to share their ideas and their practice with us. So, you know, everything from North Vancouver to Brazil and everything in between, including, you know, trips around the world through the Philippines and South Africa.
Okay.
You know, we've got lots of different people coming and sharing their ideas with us.
How does this apply to adults? Like, is there anything, like it's mostly, looks like it's geared towards like in classrooms and things, but what about adults that could learn some peace? Is there anything towards like the grown-ups as well?
Oh, yeah. Well, obviously, if you're a teacher, you're going to learn, get some really, I think, hands-on and helpful tips about how to be a peace educator in your classroom. But if you're an adult and you're looking at how one does interaction, so we've got a lot of peace education where people will talk about, where hopefully they'll share their practice of communication. So peaceful communication, when you're upset, the kinds of language that you use and choosing words that will lead to peaceful outcomes as opposed to the kinds of aggressive conflicts that we often can get into when we're really upset or angry.
Yeah.
So that kind of nonviolent communication is a big part of our program as well. So the average person off the street who wants to learn about nonviolent communication can certainly find lots to choose from.
Okay, well, that's great. I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So can I tell you about the Toys of Violence project?
Yeah.
This is so cool. We have a group of teachers who have been working to put this whole program together. And everything from student teachers to retired teachers and practicing teachers. So one day we were in our meeting group trying to figure out what we were going to do. And one of the fellows, who's a retired teacher, is also a Dukubor. And he said, you know...
Sorry, a what?
He's a Dukubor.
Now, what's that?
Oh, Dukubor is an ethnic group from Russia, from the turn of the 19th, 20th century. And they, in 1898, the Dukhobors were armed by the Tsar, and they were told to pick up their arms and go and, you know, fight somebody and kill somebody. Mm-hmm. And they said, no, we're not going to do that. So they were an ethnic group of, mm-hmm. of Russian people. And they said, no, we're not. They lay down their arms. And they were severely punished by death and, mm-hmm. and you know, all kinds of violence wreaked upon them by the Tsar and the Cossacks. They said, no, we're not going to do this, making a commitment to be peaceful. Mm-hmm. And they actually took their arms and they melted them down and turned them into plows so that they could use them for farming. You know, and so it was this really sort of great image of the Dukhobors renouncing violence in 1898. Mm-hmm. June, by the way, of
okay,
yeah, which is also pretty symbolic,
like 108 years.
Yeah, right. So they did this, and they really suffered a lot of repercussions. They were very persecuted, and as a persecuted group, they left Russia looking for a place where they could come and practice their pacifist lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And Canada welcomed them, and so they emigrated to Canada by the thousands and settled throughout the country, but mostly in the Kootenays areas. So there's a very strong population of former, they're still Dukhobors, but, you know, Canadians, Canadian-born.
Yeah.
Anyway, Sam, our Dukhobor retired teacher, said, it's really too bad we couldn't get kids to give up their toys of violence.
Mm-hmm.
And they could bring them into the school, and having learned about peace and about violence, making a conscious choice to stop playing with guns and arrows and bombs and their video games that are really violent. And at first we thought, well, you know, we'll take them in and we'll destroy them. And then we thought, well, wait a minute, let's turn them into something positive instead of destructive.
Yeah.
So we thought, why not artwork? Why not turn these toys of violence into works of peace art?
Okay.
So from this conversation around a table grew the Toys of Violence Art Project.
Okay.
Which now, in the Port Moody Art Gallery, there's the art that has been produced by mm-hmm. a Port Moody artist who volunteered his time. And it's amazing the number of people who have, for the sake of peace, have given up their paid work to volunteer their time to come and help us with this project. So Susan Rusick, who is a Port Moody teacher, talked to her kids, their parents, and the school administration about this idea and the project.
Mm-hmm.
Because these are toys that, you know, the kids' parents have spent a lot of good money on.
Right, yeah.
So the parents,
investment.
Yes, exactly. So the parents had to be on board with this, yeah. As well as all schools have a policy where you can't bring toys of violence to school. Like, schools are violence-free places, in theory anyway. And so in order to get the kids to bring the toys in, the administrator had to know about it, the principal had to know, and approve of this as well, along with the school board.
Mm-hmm.
So this became a whole community activity with the Port Moody and Coquitlam School Board and City Council, from the parents to the kids to the administrators, right up to the mayors of the Tri-Cities. And the kids brought in their toys, the artist worked on them and created these pieces of art, which then got exhibited in the Port Moody Art Gallery. A couple weeks ago was the opening.
Okay.
What's really fabulous about this is that now the mayors of the Tri-Cities want to be peace messenger mayors. There are peace messenger cities throughout the world,
okay.
And they want to join that group. You have to be sanctioned by the United Nations to do this, and so they've petitioned to become peace messenger cities.
Okay.
And the Museum of Anthropology out at UBC has mounted a show of peace art starting now in May and running through December of next year. And so the students in Vancouver schools and the surrounding area are going to be encouraged to bring their toys of violence.
Okay.
And so this is an idea that's whipsawing right across the Lower Mainland.
Yeah.
Then I was doing a United Nations conference by video conferencing, and we talked about the Peace Art Project. And next day I got an email from someone in New York saying, so tell me about your Peace Art Project. So now we figure that it's going to go right across the country into New York and places beyond. So it's a very cool idea, and it gets kids involved looking at their own practice, their own behaviors, to see what they can do in order to become peaceful citizens of our planet.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Is there going to be some on display at the forum?
Yes, they'll be at the Museum of Anthropology.
Yeah.
And so you pay your money and you walk in, and actually there'll be kids also and artists out there during the forum actually producing the art.
Oh, great.
And if your listeners want to get rid of their toys of violence from their homes, mm-hmm. and I actually had somebody phone me who said, this is embarrassing. He says, I'm 35 years old. I've still got all my toy weapons. He said, I've never known what to do with them. I really don't want to get rid of them. Yeah. But so like, what do I do with them? And 10,000 villages, the stores throughout Vancouver, will take your toys of violence and they'll take them in and then they'll pass them on to the Museum of Anthropology to be used in the art projects.
Okay.
Which is really great. And we have toy stores that are actually jumping on saying, if you bring in your toys of violence, we'll give you credit for, you know, like a bag of toys, you'll get a buck off the new toy that's nonviolent. So it's a really neat idea.
Has there been any response from producers of violent toys? Like,
not so far.
Not so far, yeah.
I'm waiting for Mattel to go. Yeah. I don't know if they produce violent toys. Or what. But
this could have a big impact.
Well, we hope so.
Yeah.
We hope so. And, you know, I mean, I have two sons, and they're certainly not kids anymore, but I've watched them grow up, and they're now young men in their late teens and 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen, you know, I mean, I've listened to the music that they listen to and the violence and often hatred in the lyrics of some of the music that's out there now.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen some of the video games that they play and the computer games that they've played over the years. And you know, there's something wrong with our society. It really is a society that has been built and predicated at this point on violence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if we look at our culture, it's actually very scary to me because it's not a culture that's based on love. It's not a culture that's based on peace. It's a culture that's based on really naked kind of aggression and in a lot of cases, violence that's manifested itself of violence against women. Violence mm-hmm. against racial minorities, certainly violence against gay people. And if you're not a white male who's strong and big, you get beaten up a lot, whether it's verbally or emotionally or psychologically. And what kind of a society is that? Mm-hmm. It's not a place where I want to live, and it's not a place where I want my kids to live, my own and the kids I teach.
What does the group hope to achieve?
We want this to be more than just a 3-day event, although okay. I got to tell you, this is going to be the event of certainly this decade. And, you know, I mean, I know there's the Olympics, but, you know, few and far between of us are going to be able to actually participate in the Olympics.
Right.
Everybody can participate in the World Peace Forum.
Yeah.
You're a lot younger than I am, but I remember back to Habitat in the 1970s. When people just showed up and it was just a happening, it was an event.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had Expo 86, which was another happening and an event for Vancouver. And I think that the World Peace Forum is going to be one of those happenings and event that people will remember all of their lives. So we hope that they will come out to the forum, they will learn, they'll be inspired, they'll share their ideas, and that they'll leave having met people who they can connect with in an ongoing way to keep building the peace movement. Because
right.
we're not starting it now. I mean, the peace movement's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
We're hoping we're giving it a little shot in the arm. Well, maybe that's a bad metaphor.
Yeah.
I'm talking vitamins here. We're hoping that this will be a bit of an impetus for people to start coming together again with renewed energy and vigor to oppose the violence that we see in our world. Right from the video game and the CDs that are being produced and the videos on TV to the Canadian government sending troops for another 2 years to Afghanistan in missions that are not peace missions.
All right, so what would the most ideal kind of result be for you to see this coming out of this forum?
Oh, what would be so exciting is to see civil society, that is average people like you mm-hmm. and me, who all of a sudden get to understand that they have some power, that they have voice, mm-hmm. and that they can bring those voices together in unity to stand up for peace. So that when, you know, they witness some act of violence by one person on another, that we stand together and denounce it and say, no, that's not acceptable. From that right through to standing up to our government to say, you know what? That's not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
We don't send our troops in to do American-style aggressive military actions. We send our troops in to do the Blue Helmet UN peacekeeping missions, which is to try to not have violence escalate. I would really hope that, you know, my sort of fondest hope and dream and vision from this peace forum is that it would say to the average person, I get to have a say in this.
Yeah.
I get to actually, you know, participate, and my participation is that I'm for peace. So for me, it would be about activating civil society, getting people moving.
All right. On what days will the peace education events be?
We open up our conference the day after the Peace Walk, and I want to talk a little bit about that. The Peace Walk is the Saturday the 24th, and we're hoping that thousands of people will be in the streets of Vancouver, walking over the Burrard Street Bridge starting at noon, walking through the downtown core to celebrate the fact that we're here to honor peace, and that we are committed to creating a peaceful society. So that's the Saturday, and then our conference and many of the other working groups conferences start on the next day, on the Sunday, the 25th of June.
Mm-hmm.
Ours runs for 3 days, the Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Other conferences run for 1 day, or some of them are two. So you just need to check out the program on the World Peace Forum website and take a look. There's a ton of stuff there, and figure out, okay, which days can I miss? And then you'll find out none.
Yeah. All right, so from the website, maybe could you keep directing people? Like, if they went to the website, where would they find the program?
The website, well, www.worldpeaceforum.ca.
Yeah.
The homepage, you see program. Click on program, and it pops up. You get a Word or a PDF file, and you can see it in either way.
Okay. And specifically, is it all at the same location, the Peace Education Working Group?
Yes, it is. Most of the programming now is out at UBC.
Yeah.
All over UBC. The registration will be at Gage Residence, so people can register. It is $50 a day, but if you're a student or poor, you know, it's like, we'll make a deal.
Okay.
We want people to come to register. So money shouldn't be a prohibiting act, that's for sure. So most of it's out at UBC. The mayor's program, you know that there are these international mayors.
Well, maybe could you explain what that is?
Sure. This whole idea started because of the World Urban Forum, which is going to happen in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And the World Urban Forum is the mayors from city representatives from all over the world coming together.
Yeah.
The United Nations created the Peace Messenger Cities and the Mayors for Peace program a number of years ago. So there are, I think, 90, I could be wrong here, but there are 90-some-odd Peace Messenger Cities all around the world.
Okay.
So these mayors are coming for the World Urban Forum, and the people who thought about the Peace Forum thought, well, wait a minute, these guys are going to be here. Why don't we keep them here and have a Peace Forum?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Vancouver City Hall actually jumped on, was Vancouver is a Peace Messenger City. And so they said, yeah, that's a really good idea. Let's be supportive of having a World Peace Forum in Vancouver. It's never happened before. We have the mayors coming. We've got the Peace Messenger City representatives coming.
Mm-hmm.
We're a Peace Messenger City Council, so let's do it in Vancouver, which is why it's happening at UBC, not SFU.
Okay.
And so that's where the city started to get involved. And the Mayors for Peace, their program is mostly downtown Saturday morning. Their opening plenary, which the public is invited to, is at the Orpheum. And so, again, the program will direct you to where this all came from. Is it all at UBC? No, most of it is, but some of it's going to be in other spots around the city as well.
What is your background in peace education? Like, what is your background? How did you land in this position?
Well, that's a good question. I am a social studies teacher.
Okay.
And I've been teaching social studies for a long time. I started in 1975.
Yeah.
So over the years, I've looked at curriculum, and mostly it's interesting because my way into peace education came through feminism. As a feminist teacher of history, I was really dissatisfied that what we were teaching kids wasn't covering the whole ball of wax.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became very glaring that, you know, when you do an analysis, as we talked about, you're studying about what men did, and what men do very well is create war. Not all men, of course, but the ones in the history books. And that's my background in teaching. So as a feminist social studies teacher, I started to look at different ways of looking at the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then as a teacher who started to understand that teaching is more than just curriculum. It's about working with kids and the kids who are in your classroom. And you start to look at all the social justice issues around you and the violence that's done upon kids in the name of racism or sexism or homophobia or poverty. That something again needed to change. So that, you know, that burning sort of social justice urge wanted me to change the world too. So for 30 years, I've come at education in a way that kind of skirted around and moved very quickly through and in and out of the peace movement.
Yeah.
But I was never what I would call a peace educator. Like, I wouldn't have identified myself that primarily as a peace educator. Right now, my work is at the BC Teachers Federation, and I'm working in the social justice division at the BCTF. And okay. When the World Peace Forum opportunity to do this came up, my employer came to me and said, we'd like you to put this program together to coordinate it.
Okay. And what was your reaction to such a big job?
My reaction was, and so what work will you take away from me? And their answer was none. So yeah. That's why I look about 105 right now. I mean, yeah. I'm really tired, you know. This is a lot of work, but it's really great work.
Yeah.
So it's in the work of doing this for the last year that I have really come to understand peace education in a new way. I mean, we all learn all the time. And so this work has allowed me to learn and to really take a look at what our world is kind of about. And I've had to ask myself this question. Is violence ever justified? You know, I've taught about World War II, and I know about Adolf Hitler. And he was a really bad guy. And, and if you could say that World War, you know, there are any just wars, I think World War II was, as some would call it, a righteous war or a just war. But what do you get when you do that? Like, yes, we had to stop Hitler, but was war the only way to do this? And if you open up the possibilities to behaving in ways other than violent ways, then you start to look at things a little bit more creatively. Because it seems to me that the only thing we've ever got from violence, even something as a righteous war or just war like World War II, is more violence. It doesn't stop it. You know, they called World War I the war to end all wars because it was so horrific.
Yeah.
Humanity kind of reeled at how awful it was and said, we can never let this happen again. But less than, what, 20 years later, we're at war again. You know, when you think about the movements of, say, never again, well, what happens if you don't take a nonviolent approach to it is you end up with violence and you end up with more death and more killing. And it just doesn't work. I've, you know, show me an example where war stopped violence. I can't think of one. Just in the big picture of things, it may have stopped it temporarily. You know, you build the Berlin Wall, you might have stopped problems temporarily, but those problems just come back in new and different ways. You know, violence doesn't stop it. It just changes its direction. And not in a good way. This year has been a really, really big learning year for me. And so when I go back and teach in the classroom, I'll have kids take a look at war and say, what came out of this? What did we get? Where was the peace that came from this war? Where was the peace that came from the violence and the killing? And, you know, kids are pretty smart. They're probably a lot smarter than me. So they'll be able to find it. But again, it's saying, okay, how could we have avoided this? What could have been done to have stopped this? And how can, and I think, for example, South Africa is so interesting. They've gone through this horrible period of violence, like, you know, really intense century of violence. And they're trying to stop the violence by having truth and reconciliation processes.
Okay.
So they're really trying a new and different way to stop the violence. So rather than once the white minority was ousted from office and you have the black majority ruling, instead of wreaking havoc and vengeance, which is our usual way, to resolve the past and the real injustices that were done on both sides, on all sides, they started the truth and reconciliation process.
Is this a Mandela thing?
Yeah. So what an interesting idea.
Yeah.
And it's not violent. It's a nonviolent way to deal with issues of war and violence that had been going on and wreaking havoc in that country. We actually have someone from South Africa coming to our program to talk about how that works and what that looks like on the ground with kids in classrooms.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Would you be able to give an example now of something from South Africa where that was applied? Or
there were people in South Africa who did very bad things to fight for freedom and liberation. And at the end of that period, when the ANC, the African National Congress, took control and government, and the Truth and Reconciliation process came in, those people who are their guys were asked to come to the Truth and Reconciliation and face the people who they had perpetrated violence on.
Right.
And they had to talk it through. They had to, I think, apologize and self-criticize and try to find a way to move forward with the people, facing the people who they had done some pretty bad things to.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
It is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of our Aboriginal brothers and sisters here in this country are actually trying similar kinds of things with their restitution models and peace circles, where they want to try a different way of going about atoning for problems in their communities.
Okay.
Again, one of the women I work with has tried to tell me a little bit and show me a little bit about the way in which Aboriginal people are trying to work. And it's not all Aboriginal people, but it's an idea about a way to take a bad situation and make it better. And so I was really privileged about a year and a half ago to go and attend a potlatch, which was a healing potlatch of somebody who had really had some violent stuff done to her, certainly emotionally and psychologically, and to watch the process unfold in a way that was absolutely new to me and completely wonderful. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what a privilege and what a wonderful thing that I had this opportunity to see this. So again, it's new ways of operating in the world that we can learn from the people around us. I mean, we don't have all the answers,
right.
And I don't think any one group does. But again, the idea of the Peace Forum is to bring people from all different cultures and backgrounds together to share the best of their thinking so that we can build upon that and make our thinking and our practice even better.
What peace education opportunities are there for Vancouver's citizens today, like at present? Like maybe they have like children and they want their children to have more of a peaceful oriented education.
Well, this is, I mean, what a wonderful thing that would be if parents started coming to the school saying, I'd like my kids to be in a peace school.
Yeah.
And to really take a look at very seriously and thoroughly where points of violence arise in school. I think that would be absolutely fabulous if parents came to their parent advisory committee meetings. They have they don't have PTAs anymore. They have PACs now.
Okay.
And if the parents came to the PAC and worked with the teachers and the principals and said, where can we create peace in our school? You'd look at the sources of conflict, the sources of violence, and then you'd have to start addressing them. So, for example, you get a school that maybe would, like a school in Coquitlam that I know of, that hangs a rainbow flag off of their flagpole, because this is a school where everyone is welcome.
Okay, instead of the Canadian flag?
Yeah. Well, okay. The Canadian flag is there, but the rainbow flag is there.
Oh, it's
as well.
Also there.
Yeah, it's also there. You know, it's where schools, if parents actually really started to look at this, I know that every school will have a social responsibility program, and it's part of the ministry's accountability program. But, you know, sometimes social responsibility is implemented in terms of compliance. So if a school says, well, we're a really good social responsibility school because the numbers of times kids go down to the office has reduced, what you're really counting is how many times kids get sent to the principal's office, and you're talking about compliance. You're not talking about peace and social responsibility. So to really look at those sources, I mean, it may be that you just don't stand up for yourself, and, you know, you don't go to the bathroom out of turn. You know, this isn't what we're talking about here. So I would hope that parents would come to their schools where their children go and start the conversation, start that discussion about what it would really look like to have a peace school for their kids.
Okay, you listening out there?
Yeah, I hope so. And the kids, you know, ask kids.
The kids,
you want to know something? Ask kids. Every time I wanted to know what the gossip was in the school, I'd ask the kids. They knew everything. So, you know, parents, ask your kids. They'll tell you.
Okay, wonderful. What's a typical response to a peace education of a student? What is the student's typical response to a peace education lesson? Do they grasp it right away and get excited, or are they kind of, you know, back off and think, oh, this is a little different, or How's it normally go? Is it usually accepted or?
It's both. It's that whole range of that you just put out there of the what is she doing today?
Yeah.
Through to, whoa, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think that it depends, like all things, how it's presented and what the point is. If you're trying to hit kids over the head with an ideology and proselytize, mm-hmm. they're going to walk away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter how good it is or what you're trying to do. But if it's a lesson that is created that allows them to play, to really kind of muck about in the stuff, in the mm-hmm. content and the ideas, I don't care what you're teaching them, it's going to be interesting to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I always call it mucking about. It's sort of, you know, getting your hands dirty and sifting through the mud and the dirt and the detritus of again, I teach history, so it's
mm-hmm.
through the past, to see really what's going on here and letting kids play. Just
right.
let them play with this, with these ideas and with the concept and the facts. That's exciting for kids.
Okay.
Letting them go through it. Sometimes, you know, I mean, kids are, as I said before, they're really smart. And they get it very quickly who you are as a person and as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes they'll roll their eyes and go, oh, you're doing it again. You know, you're making us do this stuff again. Is this more of your women's stuff? And I'd
yeah.
often say, yeah, it's more of my women's stuff. You know? And so, but they're pretty good natured about it all. And as long as what I'm doing isn't threatening who they are.
Mm-hmm.
That's really important, to not threaten who anybody is. And I've made mistakes, you know, like I can see it on a kid's face that they're walking away from me in their heads. I mean, they can't get up and walk away because otherwise they'd be sent to the office and our social responsibility queue would be down.
Yeah.
But you can see them walk away mentally.
Yeah.
And then you know you've made an error and
mm-hmm.
you got to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
So you try to fix it, and sometimes it's fixable and sometimes it's not. But kids are pretty forgiving too, and if
yeah.
they know that you're making an effort, they're pretty good. They're pretty great, you know. I've chosen a wonderful profession, and I feel very fortunate to have been able to do this for 30 years.
Okay. And what are some of the highlights for you of the form? Like, what are some of the things that you're really, really excited about?
Well, I've got to tell you, the worst part about being me at this point is I'm going to be troubleshooting. I'm going to be making
yeah.
sure that, you know, everything's going right, that the overhead projector in room 36 is actually working,
yeah.
that this person is going to be finding their place. And the worst thing is that I'm not going to be able to see a lot of the workshops
mm-hmm.
and the activities. So I looked at the program, and I looked at the labor working group program. They're going to have a huge discussion about the role of labor in the peace movement.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be there. I want to
yeah.
be part of that discussion. Then there's the activist discussion. So peace activists are going to come together and share their ideas, and the audience is going to participate.
Yeah.
I want to be part of that discussion. There's I want to be listening to those kids from Brazil that I talked about.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be in my friend Bill's class in his presentation to see how his kids do the Birmingham March.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be with this woman who's coming from the Philippines to see how in the Philippines they do peace education. It would be
mm-hmm.
quite wonderful. I want to be in Sandy Greenberg's puppet workshop. You know, I mean,
yeah.
so there's going to be lots of fabulous stuff that's going to go on. One place I will be able to be, which will be lots of fun, is to listen to Silke and Laumann. They phoned us, the Right to Play people phoned the peace educators and said, we'd like to come to your conference and present.
Okay.
And I said, oh, okay, that sounds neat. So tell me, how does sports work with peace? They said, well, like, you know, kids need sports, and if you teach them sports and play and fair play
mm-hmm.
and the right to play, they don't pick up guns and shoot each other, and they're not violent. You know, it's really...
yeah, that's a really good connection.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the right to play people will be there, and Silke and Laumann, who is their spokesperson this year, will be there giving a keynote speech.
Oh,
so I do get to hear her, which will be great. I'm going to hear Deborah Ellis, who is a children's author who has written books about Afghanistan. A trilogy, and her latest book is about the Middle East, about Palestine and Israel, which is just such a source of worry for me and so many other people. Such terrible things are being done to the people of the Middle East
mm-hmm.
by each other daily. It's got to stop.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to hear what she has to say and how she says it in a children's novel.
Yeah,
I mean, that will be wonderful to be able to do that. I want to hear Michael Apple, who's this really smart guy from the University of Wisconsin come and talk about peace and what that means for peace educators. He's, you know, one of our academics who's coming and framing it for us.
Okay.
And he's a great speaker and he's really good sense of humor.
Would he be a first day guy?
Actually, I was going to put him on my first day, but I ended up putting out on my programs that rock day.
Okay.
Because he does a lot of work and he came out of the schools in New York and he's got lots of examples of, of actually being a practitioner.
That's even better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to hear Nurit Paled, who is coming from Israel. She's an Israeli educator.
Mm-hmm.
Her daughter was killed by a suicide bomber. But she had the wisdom and the courage and the understanding to know that while she was grieving as a parent, so was a Palestinian parent for their child who had, I mean, this is for some unfathomable reason, what kind of a society allows itself to be such that children would see the only viable alternative is to blow themselves up and to kill others with them?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of a world have we created where children see this as something constructive and positive to do?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I want to hear what she has to say because she lives this every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know what I can do as somebody who cares very deeply about kids, about how we can make it so that kids don't see violence as and self-violence, killing themselves along with others,
as a
good option.
Right.
You know, that's not a good option. And I want to know what the answer is to that. And maybe I won't get some answers, but maybe I'll be able to talk to some people to get more of an insight there.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I'm very happy to have met you.
Very nice to have met you too.
So this is Jane Turner, who is...
A teacher.
Jane Turner, a teacher, talking about the World Peace Forum and specifically the Peace Education Working Group. Thank you.
Thank you.